So today we're going to continue. I'm going to try and get through, if I can, possibly maybe two of these teachings, because this is lesson number 9. I really want, when we get to lesson number 12, there's a buildup of why we're even, or not why, but there's a big teaching in 12 that says a whole lot about why we believe what we believe, why we do what we do, why we even go through scriptures, how we do, how Israel does things. There's a big teaching coming up. So this is lesson number 9, the loudest silent years in history. Again, if you haven't been here, if you missed some of them, they're all online now. And if they're not all online, usually sometimes there's maybe a week lag, depending on how many things I ask Judy to do in any given week. So, but I think she's pretty much caught up right now. Wonderful. So we're going to talk about assimilation this lesson, but I want to go back and give you just a quick overview of the last lesson. We talked about Alexander the Great. He was coming in to sack Jerusalem, and he had met with the Shamron, the Samaritans, and they were all in favor of him coming in, sacking Jerusalem, and destroying the temple. They had their own temple on Mount Gerizim, so they were constantly at war with the Jewish people about the temple. And these are their cousins. So you think about any of your cousins you have problems with, and who would want to burn down your synagogue or your place of worship. I mean, that's how bad it was. And then if you have an invading army coming in, they say, oh, yeah, you know what? That's my cousin's place where they worship. Go and sack it. We're okay with that. So, but a man stood up, Shimon HaTzadik, who was the final high priest to have use of the holy name. He went out, and remember, he went out and he met Alexander the Great, and he made a deal with him and said, okay, we don't want, please don't sack Jerusalem. And so they had, there were three conditions of the deal. Anybody remember the conditions of the deal? The first condition was always involving money. Money can get you in and out of a lot of trouble. So Alexander told him, you need to give every year, you guys need to give money to the effort, and to give money and stuff and food and et cetera, et cetera.
They had to name all of the firstborn boys Alexander.
If you want to use that one. They had it for
For the first year.
For a year, they had to name all the boys Alexander. And then the third,
the calendar to commemorate the day that Alexander entered into.
Anybody remember what the calendar was called? Not bad, not bad. You know, we didn't have a golden ticket question, but I think your answer was deserving of the golden ticket today. So there you go. All right, Casey had it. Casey had his hand raised up. I called on you, and as soon as you answer, he went. So there you go. So you just wanted, you pulled the rug right out from underneath them. Yeah.
Say the answer again on the.
So the answer was the Minyan Sdarot. And it was a calendar that commemorated the day when he made it into town, and when he made it there. But what the Jews did, they waited 12 years, and they aligned it up to where, on the date of when they left Egypt, 1,000 years after they left Egypt, that's when they started this calendar. So you see how lenient Alexander was in them. He wasn't there to try and, he allowed them to be able, yes.
What does Minyan Sdarot mean?
Well, Minyan is 10, and Sdarot, I don't know if I have it written down. Actually, I'd have to look it up. But you see Seder in it. You see the word Seder or order, and you see plural Ot, so it has to do with order or organizing a time, which a calendar does. It organizes time and gives you an idea of. And so that lasted for, up until the 18th century, you still saw bar mitzvahs and ketubahs. Anybody know what a ketubah is? We heard about it today. You heard Mora Juanita talking about it. I know you know, but anybody else? Anybody? I know, I'm giving it to Therese. You got to shout it out because there's no mic back there. It's a contract, a ketubah, yeah, in particular a marriage contract. And so you see wedding contracts in dated in Minyan Starot instead of, there were many different calendars going on at the time. So that brings us here. And again, if you guys have missed this, go back and listen, and you can listen to this again. They're all available. That's why you put them on there, because it's a lot to. So lesson number nine here is assimilation. So the Jews, they've gotten back to Israel. They're rebuilding the temple. They brought the synagogue, the synagogues back from Babel, from Babylon with them. Because remember, they got sucked out of Israel by Babylon. Now the Persians come in and take out the Babylonians, and they're ruling. And so now they're under the rule of the Persians, in particular under the rule of Darius, who was the son of Esther. And Cyrus gave the order to go back to Jerusalem and build. That was a failed attempt to rebuild the temple. Then Darius comes in, and he, by the time he comes in, and as we saw in the movie, he sends them out. The temple's rebuilt. The rest is history. So they're back there in Jerusalem. And what are the three things that the synagogue represented? What were three things in the synagogue? Somebody tell me one. Place to pray. Thank you, Bet Tefillah. Thank you, Case. I couldn't think of the bet for some reason. Bet Tefillah, the house of prayer. And somebody said over here, to study Torah, the Bet Midrash. And then what was the third one? The Bet Din, the house of judgment. So if there was a problem, you could go and have your, you didn't want to go into the Babylonian court system. You could come and, yeah. Yeah, basically it was one in each synagogue. And so, and there were small ones and small synagogues, bigger ones and bigger synagogues. There was a whole chain of Bet Din, just like we have. This is where our judicial system comes from, all the way to the Supreme Court of Israel, which is what? The Sanhedrin, right? Or the would have been the men of the Great Assembly to that level. So yeah, it was there. And this is why when we read last week in Esther, when it talks about when to celebrate Purim, and it talks about ones who were in walled cities on this day and ones who weren't. Why? Because there were certain days of the week where the Bet Din was in, they met on the days where the people would come down from all around to the one city to hear Torah being taught and to bring their things to the marketplace to sell or buy from the marketplace or to hear their case tried at the Bet Din. Yeah.
Can you explain the difference?
Can you explain briefly the difference when it says don't take your brother to court? That it's talking about the Babylonian court?
Well, it's saying don't sue your brother.
But you take him to the Bet Din.
Take him to the Bet Din. So you wouldn't go and, you know, there's a problem even in the community here. You had a problem with someone. You don't just go and automatically go to Fresno and go to the courthouse and file a lawsuit. No, you'd work it out here, right? I mean, you see this even within a church situation. You know, the pastor's going to want to have the people work it out and not. So, but the Bet Din in particular, what it was able to arbitrate were situations where you may have both people who really, no one did anything wrong necessarily. Both were following Torah, but, you know, how many of you know you can be doing right and still bad things happen? That you didn't, especially things where you didn't mean to do it. You know, I tell a story and I just say it real quick. We were in Yosemite one year and I had a cousin and an uncle up there, and man, my poor uncle, I just walked up on the scene in the campsite, and he was like, hey, you know, and he's like this, chasing down one of my cousins. He was trying to explain, his body language said, hey, look, I don't know what happened. What's going on? I didn't mean it. And their body language was just walking away. And so when things happen, sometimes you know what, how did that even happen? Everything was fine a minute ago, and all of a sudden something happens. Well, don't take that out and drag that into the Babylonian court. Or in this case, once they get back to the land, into the Greek court. No, you need to settle that here. So they kept that. So now they get home. And remember, the Bet Tefillah, it stopped because it had a house of prayer. Well, it was to stop and come against Avodah Zarah, which is what? Idol worship. Because if we come to synagogue and pray together, we're not going to go the Gentiles to, or the like the Gentiles and go and worship an idol in the pagan temples. And it also, with the Bed Midrash, it countered assimilation. Because now we're not going to go study with them and want to be like them. No, we have God has called us to a certain set of boundaries called Torah that we can get together and study together all the time. And then we talk about Bet Din if there's a problem. So they get back into Israel, and there's still a group of men meeting. They're called now the Sanhedrin, which is the Greek word for Anshe Knesset HaGadol. That's what is in Greek. But there was a difference. Anybody know what the difference was? So, and I don't expect you to know this unless you were to study it, because it's not a, yeah. There was 100, well, there was 120, but in line of what you're saying, it varied some. But the biggest difference now was that the Anshe Knesset HaGadol contained prophets of the Old Testament. The Sanhedrin did not. So that's where you had the prophets of the Old Testament when they finally died out. And that was one of the demarcation points in this. And so, now we're talking about the time of Alexander, which was in the 232 BC, 232 or 233 BC, when they, yeah. When Shammai, yeah, and that's when Yeshua's time. We're getting to that. Hold on to that, Frank, because I want to hear that, what you want to say about them, because that's one of the things we're coming to, Hillel and Shammai, among some other ones, which are just awesome. So then we here we have the Jews. They're back. They've got the temple. They're living under Greek rule. They have a deal with the new king, as it were, of the Greek Empire. And unlike the pagan cultures that the Jews had come in contact with prior to this, who worship rocks and trees and everything else, the Greeks were different. Anybody have an idea how so? Other than they make great gyros? Gyros, yeah. Sandwiches, yeah. Well, they're still spirits, but yeah, but I mean, yeah, there were, yes, yeah, there yeah. Entity, yeah, you know, yeah, right. I mean, if that's kind of a, yeah, yeah. I mean, you could look at it like that too, yeah, yeah. What were you going to say, Frank?
I was going to say that their culture seemed to elevate philosophy and storytelling.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, right on that line, the pagans they had been around had been very unsophisticated. Now the pagans they're around are very sophisticated, and they were introduced to art, sculpture, poetry, literature, humanities, philosophies, philosophy, sports, Olympics. And these things are all very seductive. And what is assimilation? I want to be like them. Everybody likes them. Hey, I want everybody to like me. Can we just get along? Can I be a part? Nobody wants to be standing outside in the rain and looking through a window. There's a party going on you haven't been invited to. This whole idea. But now they're back at home, and it's changed since they left. Because remember, when they had left, they were under Greek rule. Now they're under Greek rule. So what happened? This I want to get through. All of these things were thrown at them, and there were times where if they would say no, they would be killed. So now all these things that maybe you want to do and like to do, you're fighting not to do them. You have the synagogue and you have your family and everyone else around. But now if you don't do them, you can be threatened with death. And so what happened? A few things happened. But they began to assimilate back into the nations or the cultures around them, even within the land. And the Greeks, they looked at the body as perfect. You see all the Greek statues. And they looked at cutting of the body in any form or fashion as blasphemy. Well, that's a big problem. They didn't look at it as holy. So, well, anything. They looked at the body as God made it, as perfect and shouldn't be touched or messed with in any way. So I'm going to get to that. So the nothing should be taken from the body. So what do you think this is specifically saying? Well, if you're going to die, yeah, but yeah, go ahead, yeah. Circumcision. And so they looked at that as blasphemy. So that's a problem. So the Jews, because of the Olympics, and in the Olympics, they participated naked. So if you were Jewish, you want to participate in the Olympics, well, guess what happens if you're naked? Everyone sees your circumcision, and you're considered basically blasphemous to. But the Jews wanted to assimilate so bad that they had surgeries. They would remove skin from part of their leg, and they would recreate what was cut off with no anesthesia, no anything. And you can, if you ever want to read about this, 1 Maccabees 1:15, Josephus 12:5, number 1, and Tractate Yemavot, Tractate Shabbat 15a, Tractate Yevamot, 72a, 12:5, number 1. Go in there, you look for 12:5, and you'll see, there'll be a number 1 also. Yeah. The first, I had mine here last week. I brought it home. It's not here, right? Or I'd show it to you. 1 Maccabees 1:15. And again, the Talmud, Shabbat, and Yevamot. Shabbat 15a, Yevamot 72a. And if anybody wants to see that, let me know. I'll bring it. You can actually see it in there. But by reversing circumcision, not only were they assimilating into the culture, but they were walking away from Judaism. They were walking away from the covenant of Abraham. That's a huge issue. So in the synagogue, you had division within the Jewish people between, this is one of the big divides between the Sadducees and the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the ones who said they're the righteous ones, and the Prushim, the Pharisees. The Pharisees, they believed in keeping synagogue. Sadducees didn't. They believed in following all the Torah, including the prophets, including the writings of the rabbis. The Sadducees didn't. The Sadducees didn't care about the total Torah, except for the parts that involved the temple. So now they got a temple back, right? And they thought it was okay to assimilate as long as you follow the Torah of the temple, things related to the temple. That's the major split. So we talked about this. If you were in a synagogue, who were you around? Who was there? Pharisees. So who wasn't at the synagogue? Sadducees. Major split. And one other little group you had were the Essenes, and they were kind of off by themselves doing their own thing. Keeping, practicing Judaism, when I say their own thing, they were very caught up in purity and not being made tameh or impure. So they would do mikvahs multiple times a day. And when if you ever go there into in Qumran, they have a bunch of different mikvahs there, big ones. And they're all right there. I mean, you could. So that's what they were big on. So that's what was the situation in Israel. The Pharisees, they believed in keeping all 613 of the commandments. They were interested in understanding the halakha, or the way things were done by Israel that was had been passed down. And who were they passed down from? The Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, the precursor to the Sanhedrin. Yeah. You know what? Not in, yes, but not in synagogue. That's kind of a whole nother little branch of this. But this is where the big machloket or split or divide or where they couldn't agree came in. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely part of the Sanhedrin. And we see that because when Yeshua was, when he was crucified. So people in synagogue were always Pharisees because the synagogues were everywhere. The Prushim were popular with the everyone except those who wanted to assimilate. Yeah. Well, that's a good question. And that's about two sentences down. I'm getting right to that. So it is said and is taught that the Prushim were political. This is what you hear in history. And that's true, but that's not the only truth. Not all the regular people were Prushim, were Pharisees, but people who went to synagogues were in agreement spiritually of what the Pharisees taught. This is why Yeshua, he said, don't do what they do, but do what they teach. Because what they were teaching was right, what they were doing was where the problem was, right? But they were politically, they were a political party also based in the synagogue as well. So it was both. But you're starting to see the differences between them. The common people that followed day-to-day understanding would have been Pharisees. And that's how they would identify as Jews. The Sadducees, the Sadducees were into assimilation, and you can assimilate and still be Jews as long as you keep temple sacrifices. So they rejected halakha, or the way all Israel does things, and they made their own. This is a big problem today, everywhere. This idea, oh, you know, I don't like that, so I just go ahead and do my own thing. It's everywhere. It didn't originate in Gentile culture. It originated, or you can see it right here back in Judaism. They once again made the temple the center of Judaism, which is fine, but they didn't want to have anything to do with synagogue. So today, every church that's around goes back to this. And we can get to some specific things, but in general, it goes back to this idea of the synagogue. Because without it, there would be no idea of even a church. Yeah. Oh, do you have a mic?
The question was, wouldn't the Sadducees be included under the umbrella of they were given the authority to decide how we do things?
No, that's where the big problem was. They left, they split from, as soon as you, okay, the Anshei Knesset HaGadol as a whole wanted synagogues. And then you had this time where they turned into the Sanhedrin. But there was a split now because you have the Sadducees don't want to have anything to do with the synagogue. So they didn't have, from that point on, they didn't have any, in effect, they lost their voice within the community. And we see this, anybody know how we see this? What's the obvious way we see who was right and who was wrong? Because Yeshua, what did he do? Where did he go and teach? So he sided with the Prushim, with the Pharisees, obviously. And the Sadducees kept coming up against him, against a lot of different, yeah.
I guess my original question was, is it a matter of choice where
pretty much, yeah. I mean, if you can go to synagogue, then you weren't part of the Sadducees. You know, they didn't believe in the resurrection either. Or angels, right. Angels, demons, they didn't believe in the world to come. They didn't believe a lot of things. Yeah. Well, they were, and I'm going to get to that part of it, too, coming up here in a second. You guys are right on it. Yeah, go ahead, Casey.
What was the split like? Was it like 70-30, 50-50?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know, but it was enough of them.
It was a minority because otherwise they would have had like control of what was said at the time.
They didn't have control because they weren't part of leadership at that point. And they did. So again, let's talk about it because all this stuff kind of comes together. If they're assimilating, there's a lot of Jews we know today who we used to know in church because at some point they have a clearly Jewish name, but they ended up in church because at some point their family left Judaism. The Zweigels here met a person, they told me about a couple they met, and Joel was saying, hey, you know, are you Jewish? We recognize your name is Jewish. And they said, oh, yeah, but we're not practicing. You know, so, I mean, yeah. That's the, well, that was the beginning of that. So you had a choice to make. Are you going to stay Jewish and stay, live according to Torah or not? Or you want to be like everybody else and not? Maybe like what's left of what was there, you know, because the name you can't, well, you can get rid of it if you want to, but yeah, that's all that's left of some of them, you know. And I know a lot of people who are pastors with Jewish names. It's like, hey, you're Jewish. I know you're Jewish. Look at your name. You know, your last name is Levine. I mean, what? Tell me. You know, have you consider for one moment what your ancestors had to pay for you to even receive Messiah, but then you reject the teachings of your ancestors. They don't even think about it. You're rejecting half of the Bible that was written to you to do a specific thing. Now you're a pastor who's Jewish, and you're rejecting some of the call that's been on you. And more seeing it now and making a change. Go ahead, Case, I see you. Oh, you didn't? Anybody else have their hand? Yeah. Well, yes and no. I mean, again, there's poor people, poor Prushim and rich ones. There's poor Pharisees or poor Sadducees and rich ones. But what Frank had to say about business people, let's talk about that. This was great for the Jews who didn't live near Jerusalem. It was great for business people who wanted to assimilate, because it's a lot easier just being one of the people and having business relationships with everybody, right? Without worrying about anything but business. And so the Sadducees, they became popular with business people around the Mediterranean basin, Rome, Spain, Greece, North Africa, who had no access to temple or the synagogue, but wanted to continue to live and do business and not be looked as, you know, weird by the Greeks. Full-on assimilation and getting paid. But how they salved their conscience was how? They sent a lot of money back to Jerusalem, and so guess who really liked them? The priests, the Kohens in the temple. So, you know, you just have all of this, but all they were still all God's people, and still Messiah came back to ransom all of them. So they send money back to the temple as a connection to Judaism. When they did this, they were liked by the Kohens, and a lot of them just lost their Jewish identity. It doesn't take long. And you don't teach your children, and then that by the time you get your grandchildren, it's like what? Grandma was a Jew. What does that even mean? We never saw anything that would resemble Judaism. Yeah. Well, that's right. And then so the generation after that, yeah. So that's the obligation to teach your, in particular, teach your sons. Because the idea was that your daughters would marry someone Jewish anyway, and they would have a husband who was taught. Not that you don't teach your daughters, but you better teach your sons. If you don't teach your sons, I mean, you know, if everybody taught their sons, then everything is fine. So. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And so then the women have to do both. Yeah, exactly. All right, so that's the end of part 10. So next week, we're getting closer and closer to all these things. Some of the big questions you guys are talking about, we're getting close to hitting on them.